Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I just realised that I've been doing this for like 10 years. My 20s. Just gone. Evaporated. It's like, oh, I had all this potential and stuff like that to do things that don't matter and just to enrich my own enjoyment experience as opposed to building something that actually helps the human race progress forward. Oh, it's a life filled with regret, ladies and gentlemen. We do what we do, not because we necessarily want to do them, but because they are the right thing to do. My very special guests joining me today are going to be talking about the USS Liberty. And we have Phil Turney and David Gay Harry. Wait a second. Gay Harry, do you get that a lot?
I used to. Gay Harry, Go Harry, and some other things.
But it's just Gary, isn't it?
It's Gahari.
Gahari.
Yes.
All right. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Hate to screw it up.
It's just a name, Vinny. It means nothing, really, in the scheme of things. Well, Phil and I, we're kind of very focused on what we're doing, so nothing really matters much to us other than completing the mission, which I'm sure we're going to be talking about.
It's funny you should mention mission, because it was exactly what I was thinking to myself this morning about what I'm doing. I was just like, how do you get money for what it is that you're doing when what you're doing is the right thing and there's no money in it and it's just right. Your mission. And essentially, ladies and gentlemen, if you're donating to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, you're contributing to a war chest. It's like buying war bonds against a gratuitously tyrannical and deceitful enemy that will destroy and or annihilate everything you hold dear in every way that matters. That's what you're doing. The people like myself are a bulwark against scumbaggery. All right, there's only two things I hate: authority that is unjustified and scumbaggery, especially when they're combined. You have any idea what you can do with scumbaggery or authority? It's nuts. 20th century. What's the leading cause of unnatural death? Democide. What's democide, ladies and gentlemen? It's when you get exterminated by your democratically elected leaders. That is betrayal of the highest order, ladies and gentlemen. Treason carried a death sentence for a reason, because it was so scummy. Treasonous people are currently in charge of everything, and the only reason why they're still in charge of everything is because the people who are exposing them, who know who they are, who know what they've done, and are bringing the truth to the people, simply don't have the funding. We can't compete with a multi-billion dollar multimedia empire and things like that. They can repeat things 1,000 times a day to 28 million pairs of ears. We've got you, ladies and gentlemen. You can fund us. You can share our videos. You can like them. You can tell people. You can spread the word. Did you know that word of mouth is the most effective form of advertising yet discovered? Because people trust their friends and peers. And if people trust you, you tell them to go and check out the Vinnie Eastwood Show, check out American Freedom Radio. You're doing your part. And all we can do in any fight, in any mission, is our part. All right, so with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, let's get straight into it. So we have Phil Turney on the line. Phil, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Vinnie, thanks for having Dave and myself on your show. Certainly appreciate it. And right off the bat, I'd like to say, you know, democide is a very poignant, productive word, but I think it should be called Israeli side, because under the thumb of the Zionist regime, cost my shipmates their lives and almost murdered me. And the cover-up's been going on for 51 years, all because of the power of the ADL and the Jewish lobby and on and on and on and on. And I don't know how it is in Australia or New Zealand, but Israel has a hold on pretty much all of America. And that's why the cover-up has continued for so long of mass murder on the high seas, massacre, terrorist attack on the high seas of a flagged American ship in international waters is unthinkable, uncalled for, and almost unbearable to even think about. But it happened. It's a true story. And Dave and I are here to tell you the truth, Benny, and we'll tell you nothing but the truth. And I also wanted to say, Benny, if I might, I am the three-time president, former three-time president of the USS Liberty. I've served in every capacity there was or could be in the board of directors and in many other positions. But I don't speak for the Liberty Veterans Association, although I am a member. I don't speak for them. I want to make that abundantly clear. But what I speak for is, as I said, for the truth, an honest truth about the USS Liberty. Go to USSLibertyMovie.com, USSLibertyMovie.com, or ErasingTheLiberty.com, ErasingTheLiberty.com, and you can learn all about us. But we have a lot of time today and a lot of time to talk. I'm very interested in this radio show, very interested, and very honored to be on it with you, as I know Dave is. I heard your introductions. I thought they were great and to the point, and it makes people listen, and that's how you get a hold of people. And you said word of mouth. You're darn right. Word of mouth is the best way to go. So, again, thank you for having myself and Dave on, and go ahead and ask anything you want, because we're here to tell you the truth, Winnie.
Oh, I understand. And there are some questions on my mind, but first, two things came to mind while you were speaking. One is your dead shipmates. Now, I understand that when you lose a friend, this is a painful, painful thing, something that you never really fully recover from, because the memory of them is always absent there to be reminded, right? There's always a part of you missing as a result. But I think about it in a purely biological sense. It's usually the honourable, the decent people in society that go off to serve and fight and do the right thing as they think at the time. And when they don't come home, society as a thing, any possible children that they might have had, or even children that they do have now growing up without a father, it has a massive splinter effect on the fabric of society, I think, to not only deprive it of good men, but also to make sure that those good men aren't around to make good kids, you know, to grow up and run society in a better way. The other element that was quite interesting to me about this thought is that when you do have pain and loss, and especially revisiting an event as traumatic as being attacked in such a vicious manner, I always want pain, essentially, from my life, because I don't think that I can learn fast enough through other methodologies, and it's through revisiting and indeed visiting the pain of others and what they had to go through in order to learn what they did. That's when I find that I learn the best. But I can't ask questions of you, because only you would know the right questions to ask yourself. So my question is, what would be the ideal question to ask yourself, knowing what you know, seeing what you've seen?
Well, I think the... If I might, the correct question to ask is, after 51 years of being turned away by your own government, after 51 years, why do you continue to beat your head against a brick wall? Well, the reason that I and Dave do it is because we love our fellow man. We both served the United States Navy honorably. Dave was a sub sailor on a nuke sub, the USS Skate, with a very top secret clearance. I did not have a clearance like that, but Dave did. And he's also a disabled veteran, as I am. But I ask myself the same questions, and it always comes back the same. I had a gun put to my head by the Zionist State of Israel, and they kept on pulling the trigger, but I didn't die. the bullet didn't go off. I was wounded. I wasn't wounded seriously. They called me the walking wounded. So that's the question I ask myself. What do I do it for? The truth. No one should be allowed to get by with cold-blooded murder anywhere in the world, especially the Zionist state of Israel, murdering their so-called allies, the government of the United States of America, with unmarked jet aircraft hiding their identity, shooting at our life rafts, shooting at our firefighters and stretcher bearers. All they were trying to do, as well as myself, was trying to stay alive. When you shoot life rafts out of the water, we only have three left up for a crew of 294. 294 and only three rafts left. They shot two of them out of the water and took one aboard their ship. I got ahead of myself because of the fact is these are the questions that I would ask myself or ask somebody else. And I've been over this over and over and over. I know it like the back of my hand. And, of course, the book explains everything perfectly as well as the film will. But they got by with cold-blooded premeditated murder. And you know, we've told this story to the government. They refused to do anything about it because they said it was a mistaken identity. We've told it to the Department of the Army, who overlooks war crimes. They threw that in the trash can like it never existed. They did nothing about it. The U.S. Congress will do nothing about it because they're all in the hip pocket of the Zionist state. So it's on and on and on. And I do see light at the tunnel with the film. The film will tell all, as the book does. So, in this almost two-hour attack that lasted like as long as the attack on Pearl Harbor, over 850 cannon rocket holes in our ship, over 5,000 armor-piercing bullets through the skin of our ship, napalm dropped on our ship, shooting at our firefighters and stretcher bearers, five torpedoes fired at us, five, and only one hit, thank God. But that didn't do the men that were in the CT spaces any good. It killed 25 American heroes instantly, blew them to bits, blew them completely apart. And to see that happen and to have your own government recall the aircraft coming to save you, coming to help innocent Americans on the high seas, I mean, that's something you don't forget. You know, when Dave and I joined the military, we swore protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. We've done our duty. Now it's the duty of the American public and our Congress, which they won't do, to stand up for American servicemen. All people of the world are being destroyed by the Zionist state, including the Palestinians. They're being treated like garbage, all because of the Six-Day War. They wanted our ship sunk and blame it on a foreign country. They were United Arabs. They were going to drop a nuclear bomb on Cairo. And if our ship goes down, that would have happened. But, you know, that's why I do it. And you can ask Dave why he does it. But I got a good idea, Vinny. And that's what I would ask. And I hope Dave would take over and give you his explanation.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I think, of course, I wasn't there when it happened. Like I explained to people, a lot of times folks think I'm a survivor, but I was only seven when the terror attack massacre took place. And actually, I had just turned seven a couple weeks earlier. But when I went in the Navy, of course, I didn't know anything about the Liberty because they don't tell you. They don't want you to know about it. It all has to do with as Phil was saying, this power, this foreign government has over possibly the greatest nation in the history of the world as we know it, the United States of America. How a little country, illegal country, occupied country, can have their way to such an extent where, and you know, Vinny, that U.S. politicians can't really agree on much, but they all agree on one thing. They all agree on Israel. That's enough.
And what they say, and what they say when they agree is the only thing that they agree about Israel is you're not allowed to publicly criticize them at all, or it's the end of your career. That's how much power they've got.
That's right. And of course, in the country of Israel itself, they are very liberal in the amount of criticism that they can apply to their politicians. But our own politicians here, and this is one of the reasons why Phil and I do this, and one of the reasons why I understand very clearly about Phil and his positions, because Phil has been attacked as a white supremacist, anti-Semite, Holocaust denying, the biggest piece of garbage you'd ever want to meet. That's what these people do. That's what this is, what this organized Jewry does when they realize that if information gets out, they need to silence it. And that's the way they silence it. They throw around these epithets and these insults, because they know that most people are weak and they're too weak to think for themselves. It's the, you know, the mammalian brain. They want to follow the herd. So they understand that, and I understand it. Phil understands it. But when Phil speaks out against these people and these entities, he's 100% right. What's preventing the story of the most decorated ship in the history of the United States Navy for a single engagement getting out is this little miserable minority, is what I call them. At this point, I'm sure I'll have, you know, other terms for them. But these people are bringing shame on my friend Phil. They're bringing shame on his shipmates. They're bringing shame on the families of the boys that they murdered and massacred in such a fashion. And folks will find out when they get the book how it was done. And they're bringing shame on the entire country of the United States, which Phil has said many times, because the attack on the Liberty was not just an attack on the Liberty and the United States Navy, but it was an attack on the entire country. And technically, the United States is still at war with the Zionist state of Israel. And something has to be done, because the country cannot continue down this destructive path that it's on, where we supposedly have a First Amendment, which is unique in the history of contracts that governments have had with their citizens, where now throughout this once great nation, the individual states are passing laws that are literally preventing criticism of a foreign country, Israel. So they have this horrible lock on this, as I said, once great nation. And it needs to be broken. And the reason that Phil and I are sure that we can do that, we can do this, we can do this with the help of people like you, Vinny, with the help of your listeners, with the help of people all over the world. The reason that we can do that is because when folks are sitting in the movie theater, which I don't go to the movies very often, maybe once a year. And of course, when we go, we get the popcorn and, you know, so the folks will be sitting there eating their popcorn. And when they see across the screen the words "a true story" or in whatever manifestation they will take, and they see what happened to this United States ship. They see how it happened. They see the horrible reality of this massacre, and they see what their own government, what the U.S. government did and continues to do to cover it up. And they see that the Liberty is, as I said, the most decorated ship, which is incredible when you think about it. It's the most decorated ship in the history of the United States Navy for a single engagement. And they don't know about it. When they find all this out and they find out that it's true, they're going to be asking questions. They're going to want to know, Israel's supposed to be our friend. How could they do this the way that they did it? And that's why I always say that just the facts of the massacre, forget about everything else, because there's a lot of mythology that's attached to the Liberty. Just the facts, the undisputed facts, once they are revealed on the big screen, on the silver screen, and once folks see they're it's going to be a game changer. They're going to want to know, why did Israel do this? Why is our own government covering it up? Why isn't every U.S. school child learning about the Liberty as it is the most decorated ship in the history of their nation's history?
If they're learning about Smedley Butler at West Point, they should be learning about the Liberty too.
Yeah, absolutely, of course. And they're clamping down on West Point as well. So these, like I said, these people know. They know the power of the arts. Just like they went after this Alison Chablot in the United Kingdom for writing songs. So she literally was writing and singing songs. She was doing satire about the Holocaust. But they went after her, guns a-blazing. They hunted her down. They literally hunted her until they prevented her from having a livelihood. And they locked her up in jail because they know that through song, through the arts, a lot more can be accomplished than simply just telling somebody what happened.
Well, you can't account for taste, I suppose.
And let me say that I'm traveling right now, so I'm in a hotel room, and you might occasionally see my son in the background, on the computer, and my wife is going to come back. She went out to run a couple errands, so if she shuffles past, that's why. Ordinarily, I do these interviews in my office at home, but being on the road, I can't masquerade the reality of where I am right now.
Now, I wanted to go back to something Phil said. He said he doesn't know how the long arm of Israel affects New Zealand down here. And about 10 years ago, I think, that was actually one of my main things, is going to these anti-Israel protests that we're having down here. And one struck out as well. You were talking about how they'd shamed Phil and they'd shamed the U.S. Liberty survivors and things like that. And one of these protests was when we were down at the ASB Classic, which is a big tennis tournament, and the Israeli contestant Shahar Peer was playing, and there was a whole bunch of protests chanting, "Shame on Shahar, shame on Shahar." And without any violence, without any provocation, anything at all, the cops will come up and just say, "You're not allowed to disrupt the tennis game. People are trying to watch the tennis, you know." And they're just like, "No, we're gonna keep talking. We've got freedom of speech." And so they wound up dragging away and arresting about 13 activists, right? Just for shouting shame on a sports player from Israel. That's how strong the arm of Israel is here. And this is, of course, at the time when we had a Jewish prime minister, our first Jewish prime minister, Mr. John Key, who was also a former New York Federal Reserve banker in charge of the European bond and derivatives trade for Merrill Lynch. So, and he was a high-degree Freemason as well. So you're like, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave. It's all a coincidence. There's no context." And the other thing, that word context I just said, this is important. I just want to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, what's the context of the USS Liberty? Well, basically, during World War II, a whole bunch of propaganda got hyped up to hate Jews, hate Jews, hate Jews, get them out of Germany, get them out of Germany, get them out of Europe, that kind of thing. Attacked a whole bunch of them. We had Kristallnacht and blah, 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 blah. It was a big mess. And it turns out it was financed by Jewish bankers. Why did they do that? Because if you've got a whole bunch of your people, allegedly your people, as if they have a people, as if they care about anyone other than themselves, who are very, very afraid of living where they are, and there is only one place they can go where they can allegedly be safe, Israel, they'll go there by the boatload. And indeed, the second Exodus happened, when a whole bunch of people flooded into Israel, where the Palestinians had been living peacefully for like 1,500 years. And then they kicked them out. They had a whole bunch of terrorist gangs, like the Stern Gang and the Ergen, Jewish gangs, start up. They bombed a whole bunch of people, freaked them out, and then basically took over the place because the Balfour Declaration, which was a part of the peace treaty signed after World War II, established the State of Israel on the international scale. And ever since then, it's been a completely illegal, occupied territory, a pseudo-empire that has fed intelligence agents and banking interests and money into every nation on earth, but especially the Western nations, to stop anybody from criticizing them and their plans for the world, ladies and gentlemen. And right in the middle, right where they were just on the cusp of having their foothold really fully established, was the Six-Day War, which they started and attacked a whole bunch of countries and disabled their militaries in 6 days. Nobody had ever seen a war like it. People were talking about a world war that would last for generations. No, it was over. They tried to sink this ship, ladies and gentlemen, because they knew that that war was going to be over quicker and they wouldn't be able to conquer enough or destroy enough or take enough during the time that they had. They wanted more, and they still want more. And every single day that people don't understand the truth of this matter, they don't understand the context of this matter, the longer the secret cabal will continue controlling, essentially and tantamount, the world. And that's why people talk about it all the time. That's why they get shouted as anti-Semites or whatever, because they're right. Sure, I'm an anti-Semite. Somebody's anti-Vegemite. I'm anti-Marmite. Whatever. You know, come on. It doesn't matter. It's just a name that they call you because you're right. I'm right? Oh, yes. Call me whatever you want. It doesn't change the fact. You know, nothing changes facts. All right? Facts don't care what you think. They don't care what you believe. They don't even care what you love. They simply are. And we've got to get with them. Right? More or less. Better be on the right side of the facts. Hey, if I jump out of this airplane without a parachute, I'm going to die. Better grab a parachute. It's as simple as that, ladies and gentlemen. And reality itself has been kept from us for close to 100 years about who's really running the show and why. Anyway, that's the end of my rant. Thank you very much.
It was a great rant. you know, you're 100% right. And what it takes is, it actually takes studying and researching and reading. And then people can learn what you learned and what Phil learned and what I learned. Because without learning, and you don't have the foundation for the necessary components of how you can defeat the enemy, because the enemy does need to be defeated. When you see missiles flying around, when you see the United States in countries it shouldn't be in, you know that something's wrong. When you see civilians with their arms blown off, their legs blown off, their heads blown off, when you see what the Zionist state does to these Palestinians, what they're doing to them right now, you know that there's something not right. So, yes, the enemy does need to be defeated. And the only way that it can be defeated is when people gain the knowledge that obviously you have, Vinny. And it wasn't a rant. It was beautiful. It was right on. And it illustrated all of the time that you have put into studying this subject. And I couldn't find anything incorrect about what you said. And if that makes me an anti-Semite, great. I love it. I want to be an anti-Semite. So. But of course, go ahead. I was just going to, but of course, there's the end of it that is not funny. But go ahead, and I'll explain what I was saying. But go ahead, what were you going to say?
No. I wasn't going to say anything. I was kind of more going to try and bring Phil into the conversation a little bit more. Right.
And that's what I was leading to, because Phil, I haven't, but Phil has experienced a lot of misery at the hands of this miserable minority in the form of threats and so on. So yeah, that's what I was actually leading up to. If Phil could talk about that, because it's incredible. It's not just us talking about it, but it's actually receiving threats, which I never have, but Phil has. So,
well, I'll go ahead.
Just before you do, Phil, there was an old saying among the British Lancaster bomber pilots during World War II. They said, "When you're copping the flak, you're over the target."
Absolutely, and very well said. And you know, exactly right. When you get a lot of flak. Then they must be listening. They must know that they've got to shut you up. Well, they tried that with me, and it's a very depressing story, to be honest with you.
I love depressing stories personally.
That's
this show's bread and butter, but.
You're gonna hear one, but you know the point that really galls me, Vinny, is that being a survivor and trying to tell the truth and all of it's in the book. You know, I'm not going to give the whole book away or the film or whatever, but go to USSLibertyMovie.com or ErasingTheLiberty.com. Get the book. Check out the movie trailer, and then you'll learn it all. But I will tell you this. I've had my lug nuts taken off my trucks and stuff like that, and that wasn't just by accident. It happened twice, not once. I can call once an accident. Twice is no accident. It was absolutely on purpose. I had swastikas painted on my garage when I lived in a different part of the state. I've been called so many different names, an anti-Semite, a Jew hater, a monster, a person that is not rational, a person that's got too much hate, a person that is only out to hurt the Zionist state of Israel. Well, I didn't murder anybody. They did the murdering. All I did, I'm just a reporter. I'm just reporting what happened, as Dave is. That's what's in our wonderful book, Erasing the Liberty, is reporting the truth, the facts. Not only just, this isn't just my story, Vinny. It's a story of all the survivors that are in this fabulous book. And that's the way I wanted it. And that's the way Dave wanted it. And as Dave, being an investigative reporter, he ran into a lot of different things in the book that I never, or people, I must say, that I never knew about. Of course, which brings about a whole new version of what went on that not even my shipmates know about. But the thing of it is as you said, when, you know, you're taken in the fire. You got people that are running you down for telling the truth. As I said before, I didn't try to murder anybody. Nobody on our ship did. But you call a spade, and then you get labeled, as Dave's been labeled. I've been labeled. My shipmates have been labeled. Anti-Semitic for telling the truth to our own government. Then our own government abandoned us. Tells us stupid things like mistaken identity. It's no mistaken identity. It's cold-blooded, premeditated massacre, terrorist attack on a flagged American ship in international waters, period. And we can prove it. And our government knows that, but they still abide by the same story. It was a mistaken identity. I don't care how many congressmen you write, or how many senators, or how many presidents, it's all the same old story. It was a mistaken identity. No way, no how. They knew exactly who we were a day or two before we got there, possibly even longer. Who knows? They overflew our ship. They knew exactly who we were, a flagged American ship doing exactly what we were told to do by the United States of America. We were one of the most sophisticated intelligence-gathering ships in the world at that time. Now, I couldn't personally, I was not a communications technician. I was not a spy. I was ship's company. But I was aboard that ship almost 3 years, so I knew pretty much what was going on. But to see American servicemen, your brothers in arms, being slaughtered right in front of your eyes, and you're thinking you're next, you know, you're just looking for your next breath. You're just hoping to live another second. So, and that's kind of the way it's been all my life. Like I said before, you know, no one should be allowed to get by with cold-blooded murder, not even the Zionist state of Israel. They've been getting by with that. But the USS Liberty story, the true story, is a splinter in their eye, and a splinter in the eyes of our elected officials that they can't walk away from. That's why the movie's so important. That's why the book is so important. Telling you, you have to get the book, you have to look at the movie trailer, then you'll understand. I don't know if you've read the book or not, Benny, but Dave and I will certainly get you a copy of the finished version of the book.
That'd be lovely. The other thing is here is to define the context of what a false flag is in a simple way, the way that people can understand. Okay, you're walking down the street, you're horny. You see a really, really, really beautiful girl walking past you, and you trip her up with your leg. But as she falls, you catch her and you go, "Aren't I a nice guy for saving you? Oh, God, what is this terrible, horrible person ever?" You know, you cast yourself as the savior when you were the villain, you know, like a self-inflicted wound. And then all of a sudden everybody's got sympathy and that kind of thing. And it's just a manipulative tactic, and it's been used for, quite some time, maybe thousands of years, who knows? These guys over here, the boy who cried wolf and so on and so forth, and when you're trying to explain something as complex as just a two-hour engagement, all right, people would be surprised at how much information you can get out of 2 hours when you're talking about a lot of different participants, lots of different rounds of ammunition, each and every round of ammunition, you know, 5,000 times it happened during a 2 hour period. Each and every one of them could have your name on it. That's the kind of fear that they want the general public to feel a part of. Now, you talked before about the mammalian brain, about how we group together and we follow the herd, and that's part of what mammals do. You know, wolves got packs, even cats try to be friendly with each other when they can, when they're not trying to claw each other's eyes out. But I digress. The other part of the brain that human beings have, the other two parts really, is the what's called the neocortex. Right? It's the primate brain, more or less. Part of the brain that primates got that most mammals don't. And we've also got the reptilian brain. Now, these two things have a different function to each other. That's why we've got three separate parts. And this is how they work. Number one, you see a guy running towards you with your stick, with a stick, right? He's trying to kill you, your brain thinks. And then your brain feels, "Oh, it's trying to kill me." And then your brain reacts, "He's trying to kill me." You're right. That's how it works. Unfortunately, though, if you have been exposed for an extended period of time to something that activates your reptilian cortex, and we're talking between a month and 6 months, it can cause what they call a limbic system malfunction, where instead of seeing, analyzing, feeling, and then reacting, you see, react, see, react, see, react. You ever had a conversation with somebody and all of a sudden you say something and they all of a sudden go, ah, ah, you know, and they come at you like a foul, possessed demon beast, just crazy. And you wonder how this could happen. And it's because they suffered at some point in their life for an extended period of time. And what that suffering did is it caused them to have a very, very overactive protection system around them, always analyzing for threats, always reacting to them very, very quickly. These people can be dangerous, they can be psychopathic, but they can also be just simply people who've gone through extensive trauma and need to be looked after. They often turn out to be great leaders and things of that nature. As I say, there's a lot of reason for pain in our life, even if we don't know the reason at the time. And sometimes that reason is to motivate you. There's nothing that'll motivate you faster than a fire burning under your ass. You have any idea how difficult it is to sit down on a burnt ass? It's excruciating. But I digress. Just 1 second. Let me calm myself down. I've had a very, very busy week. I'm doing lots of editing and what have you. Now, Phil, we talk about these things, or at least I talk about these things in jest, and of course they are very, very serious. But we all have coping mechanisms to get us through those dark days. What have you been doing to help, you know, relieve some of the tension every now and again? Oh, the Israelis are calling me an anti-Semite again. Oh, they're spray painting on my wall. How, you can't just deal with that in a block it out kind of fashion for you. That shit really affects you.
Oh, absolutely. It's affected me for 51 years old. 51 years. You know, I was 20 years old when the attack happened, and I'll soon be 72. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey. But you know, coping with it, I didn't cope with it for right at 20 years because it was blocked out. I even forgot what day it happened. I just completely blocked it out until I read an article by a shipmate of mine, Stan White, Master Chief Petty Officer, and a very prominent newspaper in Denver, Colorado. And I felt like the whole world had been lifted off my shoulders, because he was talking about it, and we were ordered not to by a very prominent Admiral Isaac Kidd, never to speak a word about it to anyone, including our parents, our brothers, anybody, shipmates, or whatever, or we would end up in the penitentiary or worse. So, yeah, I didn't cope with it until 20 years after that. And then I started thinking, my God, you know, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. And then I started writing letters to Congress. That was a wasted time. Thousands of letters I wrote. I didn't write them all. My wife did 99% of the work. All I did was dictate. She typed it out. But, you know, I owe her all the credit in the world for all the things she's done for me. That's one of the reasons I was so happy to meet Dave and get these books out and get the truth out, because that's the only way that I can really cope with it, is to tell the truth. you know, I'll take a lie detector test, anything you want. I'll do it. I'll go before Congress. In fact, I went to the State Department to tell my story, and I was cut off. I wasn't allowed to talk in my own State Department about the USS Liberty. But on the panel were pro-Zionists. In fact, the moderator, Mark Susser, is a pro-Zionist. And they cut me off when I was at the microphone, out of time. People were yelling, let him speak, let him speak, let him speak. And they would not do it, Benny. They would not do it. In the house of the people, they shut me down because they didn't want to hear the truth. It's terrible.
It gets to a point after a while as an activist that you stop going to the authorities to plead your case. You stop telling them what the truth is because you know that they don't want to hear it. And instead, you start to just do your own thing. And you realize that you don't need them anymore. You don't need their authority to say, so yes, this is actually the case or whatever, because you know the truth and you just got to spread it out and just put it out to more people, right? And you feel that's kind of more productive. You know, it's not banging your head against a brick wall because people wake up to it every single day just through work that you may have done 10 years ago.
You know, you make a very, very valid and honest and good point. As I said before, when Dave and I started working together, and I met Dave before we even got together, but I was impressed with him. And I liked his style. I just liked the guy. And I was lucky enough to catch him on the road. He was moving to a different state. And we talked, and we talked a little bit more. And then we hooked up. We've been hooked at the hip ever since. But getting the truth out has been more beneficial for me, the real truth. And I can tell you, I've read quite a few books on the USS Liberty. And I can guarantee you this is the best book you're ever going to read, the most factual book on this subject of the USS Liberty. I'm just so proud of it. It makes me feel good. And it ought to make all Americans feel good to read the truth. It's going to make you angry. It's going to make you cry. It's going to make you sad, but it's also going to educate you. And for that reason, yeah, I'm not beating my head against a brick wall anymore. It's more of a mission. And Dave and I do a lot of speaking engagements and do a lot of radio shows together. And it's been one hell of a journey. But I must say, Vinny, we're all getting older, and they're just waiting for the survivors to die out. And that way they figure that the story's going to be gone. Well, it's not going to be gone because the book and the film's going to be around, and other people will pick up the mantle when we're all dead and gone. That's my hope. That's my hope and my prayers because, again, as I said before, I don't know how long this power is going to last, but the way it looks, it's going to last for a long time. Until this book and film is widely read and spread across the world. That's why, go to USSLibertyMovie.com, go to Erasing the Liberty, go to USSLibertyMovie.com and ErasingLiberty.com. Get the book, look at the trailer, and, Vinny, that's why I asked, I know that Dave doesn't mind getting you a book as soon as possible, and you read it, and once you've done, you can give us your thoughts on air or whatever you like to do it. But as I said before, you're gonna cry, you're gonna be sad, but you're also gonna be proud of who we are as a people. We're not out trying to beat the hell out of Israel or to destroy anything. But the truth is the way it is. and you can't run away from the truth. You just can't do it. It will catch up to you. You know, karma, when you get bad karma, it lives with you.
And I was just thinking,
got a lot of bad karma.
I was just thinking as well about the source of our traumas and the source of yours, Phil, dealing with this. And one source of your trauma was the attack itself, but the true source of the trauma wasn't the attack itself. The true source of the trauma was that you weren't allowed to talk about it. That's what really got you, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. No, you had to hit the nail right on the head. Yeah, it's very disturbing, you know, especially when your own government leaves you out there to die. When they know you're under attack, they knew exactly who was attacking us. So, you know, and like I say, Dave has done such a wonderful job with this book. You know, I can't thank him enough. It means the world to me, as well as the film. But, you know, Dave's got a lot to say, too. I know him, and very learned, smart guy, does a lot of reading. There's not much this guy can't do except swim. I'm just kidding you. But, Dave, go ahead, if you would, my friend.
You're muted, Dave.
I'm sorry. I didn't have to know how to swim because I was on a submarine. And if we went down, you're done anyway. Or not down, you're already down. But if you went down. Yeah, Phil, and I've said this before. he puts up with me, man. I'm a pain in the ass, Vinny. I really am. You know, because I do things a certain way, I got to do them a certain way, and I kind of, you know, have good instincts for certain things, and I know, and I've said this to Phil, and he knows it too. What we're doing, even though this might sound preposterous, but what we're doing has already been done, and we just need to catch up to it. It's there. It's actually there in the future because I can feel it. And if I didn't feel it, then I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do or say the things that I do in the way that I say them. But I'm sure that it's there and we're going to meet it and we're going to get it done. And then, like I said, once we do, and we're not doing this for any other reason than to, as you mentioned, in your introduction, you know, you obviously people don't do this to earn a living or to make money. They do it because they're drawn to the truth, and the truth is more important than anything. And that's what draws you to people like us and to all the people that we're connected to is the truth. And also, I think the other part of it is that people who are more inclined to hold peace in a high opinion than war. You know, we don't like to, you know, kill anybody. We don't like to hurt anything. I can't even, you know, kill an insect. I don't want to kill an insect because they're smart.
Well, they're smarter than Congress anyway. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end of the first hour, and I'm sure Dave will get to speak more during the second hour than he has during the first. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead. Make my news. And go ahead, ladies and gentlemen, start up an automatic payment today, either through the PayPal or the Kiwi Bank, or if you want to support us monthly, patreon.com/Vinny Eastwood. We'll see you after the break, folks. Thanks for supporting the show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two, excuse me, of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. Damn, that was a quick break. Whew! Okay, how can I catch my breath there? I was running. Oh, God. I've been up since 1 o'clock this morning, ladies and gentlemen. I went to bed real early because the day earlier I got up real early and worked all day. And then it was like about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I was like, oh, man, I think I should just go to bed. And I did, foolishly. And so I've been, did like about 8 hours of work before the show even started at 9 a.m. Got a whole working day done, you know? Because when you're doing this gig, man, there are a lot of things to do. Other people, they might have producers who, like, find a guest, give you the guest, research the guest for you, what have you. I've got Vinnie Eastwood. And other people have webmasters who manage the website, create all the articles, and make sure it's all published and that kind of thing, and shared out across many social media platforms, so it gives a wide range of stuff to do. I have to do that. Some people have got editors that they employ to sit there and make sure that your videos don't look like crap and spend endless hours editing them and that kind of thing. I have to do that. See, I have to do everything. And that's why I ask for support, because even if I'm only doing the one show a week, that's not all I'm doing. There are so many other different forms of things that I do, lots of videos on different topics, supporting different forms of activism, far away in a field, and been doing it for about 10 years now. That's the kind of commitment it really, really takes, I think, in order to be an honest journalist. You really do have to do all the hard yards yourself, and you really do have to do it for years before you even get to the point where you've got the pedigree to say, yes, I'm actually very comfortable with asking for support from my audience so that I can continue to do what I'm doing, because I believe what I'm doing is justified. If you believe so too, ladies and gentlemen, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com or patreon.com/VinnieEastwood. Make a donation or start up some kind of automatic payment every week, every month, whatever it is you can afford. Can you afford $100 a month? $25 a week? Whatever it is that you think this show is worth, everybody gets it for free. But whatever you think it's worth, please, support me. I do need it. Back to my very special guests. We've got Dave and Phil talking about the USS Liberty today, a false flag attack, which, unfortunately for the government, wasn't entirely successful. Just think about this for a second, ladies and gentlemen. What's unfortunate is that a nuclear war didn't kick off, right? That's the kind of mindset you've got to be in before you start to understand your enemy. But if you've got to defeat an enemy, you've got to understand him, right? That's the problem. If you've got a conscience, thinking like these people who do this kind of thing, plan these things out, execute them, that's a tough, tough road. You've got to see it. You've got to feel it before you begin to even grasp a minute amount of understanding. And even then, they'll throw curveballs at you that you just didn't see coming. That's why the mark of a good journalist is being jaded and cynical. Because I've seen it all before, and they use the same goddamn tricks every fucking time, don't they? Hey, guys, it's the same bullshit. Every single time they're trying to refute you. Or it becomes predictable after a while. And I believe that once it becomes predictable, that's when you become at peace with the situation. You understand the scumbaggery. You understand your enemy, and only then can you adequately fight them. That's my belief, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, Vinny. And I think that it's reaching a fevered pitch, the occupation of Western nations by this miserable minority. And during the break, I was communicating with the person I mentioned previously, Alison Chablot, the musician. She's just a musician. And they have already locked her up in jail several times for writing and singing songs. and using Jewish melodies in her songs and talking about things that they don't want her to talk about. Of course, it's okay for a pig such as this Sarah Silverman or Berg, whatever her name is, this Jewish quote-unquote comedian to do the things that it does, that's okay. But as soon as the Jews are mocked, then they literally have the power to put Gentiles behind bars, and Jews as well, like Gilad Atzmon. So I think we're coming to a point in the history of this censorship by the miserable minority. We're coming to a point where people now are going to begin rebelling. And I think that it can't do anything else but that, because to put a singer in jail to make sure that people don't or can't listen to her melodies, it's crazy. It's nuts. And I know that, you know, the First Amendment is not everywhere. And I understand that, and you know, but it's here, and just basic decency, the fabric of a nation like New Zealand or Australia or the United Kingdom or Canada, these countries have been occupied by this alien tribe who wants to have the entire populace of all of these nations under their thumb, to make sure that we can't talk about the Holocaust, to make sure that we can't talk about the USS Liberty. And that's when I realized what we were up against, which poor Phil has been struggling against all of these decades. When I realized what they were doing to Phil and what they were doing to his shipmates, that's when I said to myself, no, it's over. They are not going to dishonor the memory of these guys. As a Navy guy, I consider these guys my shipmates as well. And I will not allow them. I will do whatever is in my power to make sure that they know that it's over, that they're not going to disgrace the memory of these guys. And we're going to get this done. And then let's deal with what happens after that.
The whole concept of do the right thing and then chips fall where they may applies across many sectors of society, even like local government corruption or something. I once interviewed a guy here in New Zealand who got the entire city council, including the mayor, fired, right? One time, it was like 10 years ago. And it would seem to me that there are occasions where those kind of big clear outs will happen, but they just have the same crowd of people come back and fill the void, right? And I thought about this analogy like a zeppelin. When they're being tied down, they need to have ropes at the back, ropes in the middle, ropes at the front, ropes all over the thing to stop it from freaking floating away. And it seems that the world is lashed with these ropes. And each little country lashed with a whole bunch of them and that kind of thing. And there's no way to actually set the world free by just cutting one or just cutting two. It comes to the point where there will be some kind of inevitable global revolution that would happen. But not a revolution per se, because that just means they go in a circle, but actual evolution. All right, human beings have been living under the illusion that we're the most evolved form of life on this planet. I disagree. I think psychopaths are actually the most evolved form of life, because they're very, very freaking dangerous, ridiculously hard to kill, wind up in the most powerful positions with the most amount of influence, and they basically can get away with anything. If that's not an evolutionary advantage, I don't know what is. It's called not having a conscience. It's not having an active mammalian brain that feels or cares about other life. That is their so-called advantage. Now, that, of course, comes with a lot of disadvantages. How do you feel loved if you can't feel love? you have to activate the portions of the brain that are still active. Oxytocin. What's the other one that everybody's chucking into their cell phone? Is it a dopamine?
Right. Dopamine,
How do you get these? You get these by stimulating your sense of power and importance, and you get them through sex, and you get them through really powerful, awesome drugs. All right? The good stuff. Now, think about that. If you were a cup that could not be filled in the only way that you could ever feel in any way human is to break laws, rape, destroy, feel powerful, and that kind of thing. Imagine what kind of a monster you've become. And then you kind of understand. Oh, so that's why everything in the world seems so crazy. That's why people who are telling the truth get persecuted, and then those who are telling lies get lauded as heroes and given knighthoods, isn't it? Yeah, because the exact opposite motivations that we have to love my wife, to take care of my family and my friends, that kind of thing, doesn't occur to most of the people in power. It's just, nah. I remember one time a psychologist referred to it as a, if you had a bit of a cold and you got some tissue out, you blew your nose, and then you screwed up that tissue and then you tossed it in the wastebasket. Now, on your way to work, you thought for a moment, man, I was really mean to that tissue. I blew my nose all over it. I scrunched it up. I just threw it in the wastebasket like it was nothing. That's how a psychopath would think about us. Because you don't think that about the toilet tissue, do you? You don't. It doesn't even occur to you that what you're doing is to something that might have feelings or might be important or whatever. Now you understand how the government thinks about it when they recruit you into the Navy, when they recruit you into the government positions and things like that. Here is the lie. Help us perpetuate it. Help us put it out there. And what these two guests are saying, ladies and gentlemen, is no more. No more lies. Enough people have died and suffered at their hands, and they have to end, essentially. The most important lies of our time, they have to stop being told. And the only way to annihilate a lie is with the truth. And this is a war, make no mistake about it.
Phil, you out there, buddy?
I am. I was just sitting here thinking, and it's been, the thought process of Vinny is amazing. And I've never really thought about it quite like Vinny has put it out there, but I also want to, say a couple things. First of all, thank you, Danny, for starting this network up and having such a great person on your radio show for so long. I mean, you did very, very good. I'm proud of you for that, Danny. Really am. Thank you. And I also wanted to say that, Dave mentioned the miserable minority. Well, I kind of disagree with Dave in that respect. I think it's a miserable majority now, especially in this country. They've got the Congress. They've got the media. They've got the television. They've got the movie industry. And they've got the churches. Now think about that. They've got everything. They got us locked up. We're in a cage, and nobody even knows it. That's why the book and the film is going to unlock those cages. That's why you got to read it. That's why you got to go to the trailer. That's why you got to support us. And I know one thing, Vinny, that Dave and I will certainly send you a contribution for your efforts. There's no doubt about it. Also, because you've got the red ass, I'm going to make sure that I send you a couple tubes of preparation H, to kind of take care of that fire under your ass, which you very much deserve for doing this radio show. And the way you do it is outstanding. Very proud of it. Very proud of you and very proud of Danny and the network. That being said, go ahead, Dave.
Thank you very much, Phil. We get that a lot. Now, I wanted to...
What, Preparation H or what?
No. That we're just so fabulous and great at what it is that we do.
Okay.
It's just like, yeah, we know. We had this concept like this Talk Me and Danny had, like, I think it was the first day. I think it might have been like 2010 or something like that. And it's something I'm trying to mentor other people into talk radio, is that the first thing you've got to make sure of when you're on the talk radio, other than the technical aspects, just make sure your audio's not screwed up or whatever, is just to have fun and be yourself, you know? Because ultimately, when we're projected over a microphone, or something of that nature, we're not cognizant of the fact that we are capable of using our voice and our words to effect real magic. You can make people feel things with words. That's why the talk radio thing is such a popular medium for the information. This is how we've been spending thousands of years hovering around something in the middle of us that's glowing, and listening to people tell us the story of how stuff went down back in the day, right? This is really an ancient practice brought into a technological age. And every moment that we have airtime is an important moment, because no matter what people think about what it is that you say, they cannot unhear it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday the penny will drop and they'll go, oh, I have been a slave my entire useless fucking existence. Maybe I should do something about that shit, you know? I mean, it's one of those comforting realizations, isn't it? Oh, my entire life's been a waste. Oh, okay. So, and that shocking anger that we get when that happens to you is a what's known as the grief process. It goes denial. I live for a period of time refusing to believe that it frickin' happened. It didn't exist. Anger. Oh my God. It kind of did happen. It kind of did exist. I'm really pissed off at these people who did this right now. And then it goes into bargaining. Well, maybe I can write a few letters to them. Maybe I can get this worked out. Maybe I can go through the normal channels and have it sorted by brunch. And then, depression. You know what? I don't think I'm going to be able to do this all of a sudden. This stuff's actually really quite hard. And it's an enormous burden on my shoulders, and I'm unable to fulfill my role that I foresaw. I was wrong. I was wrong about what's happening, and I was wrong about my ability to deal with it. And then the final stage, which most people actually never get to. Most people stay in that fourth stage. They don't feel powerful enough. Final stage is acceptance. When you say, hey, this did happen. I can do something about it. Indeed, I must. And indeed, I don't have a choice. That's what people call a moral obligation. And I think that's what happens to everybody who gets traumatized, if they're willing to let that truth in. That yes, because you survived, you are still alive. You can still do something about it. Right? If it did not kill you, you can still do something to affect the living. So, you may applaud me for doing this show, gentlemen, but I applaud you. And most of the guests that we have on the show, because we've all made our own sacrifices. We've all gone through our little journey of self-discovery. We've all learned what power we have inside us and what responsibility that power carries with it.
Vinny, let me ask you, is there a way for folks to listen to the show via their cell phones?
Yep, there is an app on the homepage of AmericanFreedomRadio.com or tunein.com/radio. There should be a thing to search the American Freedom Radio one on there. But ultimately, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and just get that live listening button. It's down on the left or the right. I don't know. It's on there somewhere. It's got like a cell phone.
Someone had asked. That's why I was asking.
Oh, well, that's very nice that there are actually people listening, because often a lot of this stuff is done in the later editing process. Imagine, you know, like for every minute of airtime that we're putting up, it's maybe between 6 and 10 minutes to edit that 1 minute of airtime as a video, that kind of thing, so that the audience has cameras changing from one to the other. I try to put in a lot of effort, and everybody gets it for free, and nobody gets any rewards for donating anything to me. And I got the feeling that it was kind of like the right thing to do at this point in time, you know, just give people something a little bit easier to watch that has a bit of variation. And I do appreciate that actually after starting to do that, more donations and things like that have come in. And we're a little bit further away from poverty than we were, but more needs to be done. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just thinking about money. When you're doing something for an activist cause and what have you, that most frustrating thing is all the time, don't have the finances. Hey, can you come down here and help us with that? Sorry, I can't afford the gas. Do you want to come out for a coffee or something? Sorry, I can't afford the coffee. It's a spider's web of complex, annoying things with technology and people and money and that kind of thing. It all conspires against you to make your life harder.
Innocently conspires.
Well, one can only hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're talking to two guys who don't have a lot. Phil and I don't have a lot in the way of money, and we are obliged to do the same thing, to ask folks for donations, which are only used to promote the film and to market it. So yes, it's not easy. You know, you see these GoFundMe pages, and a lot of them are for, you know, good causes. Like I saw some savages attack this something like 95-year-old man, accusing him of doing something that he didn't do. They beat him pretty bad. I mean, he's gotten over $250,000, the poor guy. You know, things like that make sense. There are other things that don't make sense. Money pours in, it seems, for all the wrong reasons. And there are people who have, I know for a fact there are people who have more money than they can ever spend. They would never be able to spend that money. And people like you, people like us, we're struggling just to make ends meet. And the reason is because, as you said, we're doing something good, and we're not hurting anybody. We're trying to help people. And that is not rewarded, unfortunately. And it goes back to the mammalian brain. I know Phil has worked his whole life doing things that don't hurt people. I know whenever I was in a sales job and I eventually found out that what I was selling wasn't good for people, I immediately quit. I just said that I couldn't stand it. You know, once I found that out, and people, when they found out that I did, you know, relatives as well said, why are you doing that? You're making good money. And I would explain, because I'm selling something to people that's not good, and I wouldn't want to be sold something that is not good. So it's over. It's done. What we're working on is a righteous cause. And as I said in a previous interview that Phil and I did, the boot of truth will be crushing the bad guys soon. And I'm looking forward to that when we can sit down and watch this movie and look at the reaction on people's faces, because I know, and Phil knows, what happens when people read the book and they come away with mostly anger. And you can't help but come away with anger when you see what these boys were subjected to 51 years ago plus, and what they're subjected to right now. I mean, if you look at what the American Legion, which is a 2.4 million member veteran group that services veterans, what they just did to the USS Liberty, it's shocking. I don't know if you heard about it, but Phil just wrote a letter to the editor of a newspaper about it. So if he would be so kind as to tell the story, that would be great.
Well, Dave, you know, the big thing about the letter and what the American Legion did. Now, the American Legion, folks, if you don't know, is one of the oldest veterans groups, and I think the largest in this country. And last year they passed a resolution to support an investigation from the United States Congress about the horrible, deliberate, murderous attack on the USS Liberty. And then the powers that be, Ernie Gallo, Larry Bowen — Ernie Gallo's the president, Larry Bowen is the vice president of the Liberty Veterans Association — did everything by the book. They sent their money in for a booth. They paid their money. They had the check. And there was a resolution passed last year to support the USS Liberty veterans and their cause for justice. I don't have it in front of me, Dave. I know you do, and you can get it for me while I speak, but just for a few more moments.
Mm-hmm. I will.
But the point of this is, as I said before, the power of the Zionist state on America, not only the four or five things that I mentioned, but it's the power over our own veterans organizations, including the American Legion, is disgusting, dishonest, and dishonorable to all veterans in this great country, the United States of America. And I might say to all the great veterans around the world, in all countries, that have served their country for a reason, because they love their country. And then to be pissed on by the American Legion — and I'm a member of the American Legion, Post 560 in Zimmerman, Minnesota, which is the USS Liberty home port. It's not all American Legion members. It's the hierarchy, whatever you want to call it. They run that organization. It's disgusting. It, as I said before, it's dishonest. And it just breaks my heart. All the work that Ernie did and Larry did to get this thing done, and Dave can pick it up there because I know he's got it up by now. But the thing of it is, all the letters you write, all the things you can do, really makes no difference because of the power of the Zionists in the United States of America and around the world. Please go ahead, Dave. I know you got it up.
Actually, yeah. I want to jump in here because, Phil, you referred in the first hour about how we're in a cage by these people. And I referred to human potential as kind of like a spring, you know, being held down. And the harder you hold it down, the more it tries to pop back up. But I was corrected when I said that on a show one time. And he said, no, humanity is actually more like a water spring. Doesn't matter if you try to hold that water down, what it's actually going to do is start burrowing through dirt and rock, and it's going to start springing out above ground in places that you could not have predicted. It's going to find all the weak spots and crawl through it in order to get up. that's what humanity is kind of like, and that's what people like us are like. It doesn't matter if you hold us down. In fact, the harder you hold us down, the worse it becomes for you. The problem is we don't have a feedback. They can look at us through our webcams. They can see the pain that they're causing us. But we can't see them scuttling around going, God damn it, they're going on the Vinnie Eastwood show. What do we do? What do we do? You know? Just see if we can stress them out, ruin their day. It'd be nice to know sometimes that you're having an effect, like actually be a fly on the wall or something of that nature. But it's not. It's like a silent war. It's like a communications blackout is essentially the first sign that an invasion is going on. It's so that people can't communicate with each other. It's so they can't trust each other. It's so they don't know what's going on. Because if you can't communicate, you can't trust, and you don't know what's going on, how are you ever going to organize a strategic defense against your invader? You can't. The alternative media is affected by this war game, I think, to a very, very large degree, and we've got to be cognizant of it if we're going to be able to fight subsequently. But, yeah.
I just wanted to mention before Dave comes back on, because it is very interesting that you mentioned spring, and you're exactly right. I've got my property here. I've lived on it quite some time, and I had no idea there were any springs on it until last Wednesday, July the 4th, and my son was going around my property. He says, Dad, you know, you got springs on here, and I says, no, I don't. He says, yeah, you do. Says, yeah, you do. And I went and looked, and I said, I'll be darned. There are springs here. And for you to bring up that analogy was quite appropriate at this moment. I'll tell you, it's funny how life works and how analogies are real life. But you're exactly right. When a spring comes up, it can come up anywhere. And if it doesn't open up one place, it'll go to another. That's kind of like how Dave and I got together. Is that spring, or just like an aspen tree? They're all wired together, and once they connect, you meet like-minded people, like you, Vinny, Danny, and Dave, and all like-minded people around the world. And we got a lot of people around the world that love our book and with the new book. But yeah, the analogy was great. Sorry to break in there on because I know Dave wanted to read this, but you're exactly right. And, the human spirit is a spring. The human spirit has a lot of veins and avenues. The heart, a good heart, not a mean heart, but a good heart. Just because you criticize somebody doesn't mean it's a mean heart. It means it's a truthful heart. And, you know, it means a lot to me to know the truth and to get it out. Thanks for the help of Dave in this book and the film.
Hope springs eternal. But while you were talking there, I just want to read out this because it's so appropriate for our time. It was recited a couple of hundred years ago, I think. When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it, and a moral code that glorifies it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that's the powers that be, and to the victors go the spoils, and also go the history books, and so they are erasing. That's why it's called Erasing the Liberty, because they want it erased. They don't want you to know about it. And it's not funny. It's horrible what they've been doing. But even as early as Phil and I began this campaign, this mission, there has been so much erasing of history going on that now it's actually worked its way into the vernacular. They're erasing the history of the Confederates now in the United States. They're erasing the history of George Washington. They in the church that George Washington would attend, they even took down his picture there. It was there from when he was attending, or a plaque it was. They took that out of the church. So this element, and it's not just Israel, it's not just Jews. As you said, it's Masonic. It's more to, there's a lot more to it than just one religion or one race of Jews. It's not that, although they seem to be in the forefront of, for example, wanting to bring in or wanting unbridled and unfettered immigration into formerly white majority countries. They even admit it. So this is something, again, that all one has to do is open your eyes, pick up a book, open it up and read, shut up and read. And you'll find out the answers to why a lot of the misery in the world is happening. So, yes, it is something that the erasing of history is problematic. It's, you know, it hurts me personally as somebody who has spent a lot of time with history. Being a history major in college, I have a lot of respect for history. I don't want these neo-Marxists to be able to erase the history of, in one case here, the Confederates in the South. I'm originally born and raised in New Jersey, so I'm a Yankee, but I live down South. I call myself a guest of the South. I'm in the Deep South, and I love the Southern people. I love how stuff moves slow down there, a lot slower than, for example, where I'm at now in New Jersey. And I love the fact that they're just beautiful people. There is that Southern charm. There is that Southern hospitality. And these Northerners predominantly and these aliens, they want to take a big eraser and just, you know, take all of the Confederate monuments that were honoring these people. This is the history of the United States. You cannot erase it. It's the same thing with the Liberty. That's what angers me so much. These people want to erase the history of the Liberty, and we're not going to let them do it. But I will read that segment now. Let me bring it up here. Just give me a second.
Hold on, you accidentally clicked yourself on mute there, Dave.
Oh, thank you very much. thank you very much. The American Legion, like Phil said, a big organization, 2.4 million member. I'm going to read to you it's an article I wrote for the newspaper. It's quick. American Legion betrays servicemen. Prominent veteran group denies display space to Liberty Veterans Association. And as Phil was saying, in 2017, the 99th, so they've been around for almost 100 years, the 99th National Convention of the American Legion, which you can call AL, the 2.4 million member War Veterans Organization founded in 1919, of course, the year after the end of the Great War, the First World War, which was held in 2017 in Reno, Nevada, produced resolution number 40. It called, quote, upon the 115th United States Congress to publicly, impartially, and thoroughly investigate the attack on the USS Liberty and its aftermath, and to commence its investigation before the end of 2017. The 50th anniversary of the attack. Although it was a valiant gesture to bring justice to the terror attack that took place aboard the spy ship USS Liberty, AGTR-5, that's its number, where on June 8, 1967, 34 Americans were slaughtered and 174 more were wounded in broad daylight in international waters, the reality is that the entire Congress is in the hip pocket of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. No investigation was completed last year, nor was it ever seriously considered. That's why when Phil and I read that, you know, that they're calling on the 115th Congress to do it, it's like, what a joke. I mean, the Congress will not do anything that Israel doesn't want. But there are still people you know, even from the Liberty, who don't know yet because they haven't studied it like we have. The AL, however, has now reneged on its promise to the USS Liberty. They declined the USS Liberty Veterans Association's, and that's called the LVA, the LVA's request to set up a booth at the 100th National Convention this year in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In fact, a letter from the AL to an LVA member was so harsh, one wonders why they even bothered passing resolution number 40 the previous year. And by setting up a booth, I mean, as a veteran, I've been to these conventions, you know, whether it's the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars or the Disabled American Veterans, and you set up a booth and you have, like, you know, your stuff out there and people can come by, and if they're interested, they could learn about the Liberty. That's all it is. That's all they wanted to do.
That's a unconventional booth to have at a convention.
Well, you mean like an informational booth?
No, which I meant like a pun.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. And here's the letter that the wonderful American Legion sent to one of the members of the Liberty Veterans Association. Please find enclosed the return of your 2018 exhibitor contract request, 2018 housing form request, 3 May 2nd, 2018 letter, and 4 a check for $1,000. The American Legion hereby declines your offer and request to rent exhibitor space at our national convention. No space nor housing has been reserved for you under these terms. Very truly yours, Kevin J. Bartlett, JB National Judge Advocate. So why pass Resolution 40? I don't know. If they're going to do this, if they're going to slap the Liberty guys in the face, slap the whole country in the face, why lie that you don't have exhibitor space? Because they did. So let me go back to the article, and it's quick, and I read to you the letter, so that's out of the way. The LVA put something up on their website to counter this letter, and I say here, what makes this all the more puzzling is that the American Legion has hosted the LVA many times over the years, and its booth has been very popular with attendees. Even more shocking is the fact that the AL has lied to its millions of members and supporters to exclude the LVA from their convention. The LVA's blog revealed this bald-faced lie in a June 4th update, when they say the American Legion has lied to Legionnaires who called the national organization to find out why the LVA has been denied a booth at the 2018 American Legion National Convention. Legionnaires have been told that at the time the LVA requested a booth, there was no space available. For this to be true, the national organization would have had to run out of exhibit space on May 7, 2018, 3 months and 17 days prior to the convention, which they proved that they didn't. So they had the space, so they lied.
I find this is interesting that this is happening under a Trump presidency and his big catchphrase, make Israel great again.
Right. And finally, I said, Congress has failed miserably for over 51 years to honor the men, many of whom pay the ultimate price for their country. Of the USS Liberty. This is, as former Chief of Naval Operations and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas H. Moorer, called it a national disgrace. Now, Tom Moorer, who Phil was friends with him, wonderful guy from Alabama, from Eufaula, Alabama. Tom, if I can call him that, he gave his all to get to the bottom of the Liberty. And even as the Chief of Naval Operations and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he could not break through the lies and the secrecy that they've covered up, because it started with Johnson. So it started in the executive branch, and they're not letting anyone know about it. But again, the point is, It doesn't matter. Keep your secrets, dirtbags, because all we have to do is show the facts of the attack and show the facts of the cover-up, and that's going to be enough to blow this thing wide open. Then people are going to be pissed off, and they're going to want to know, what else is the government hiding from them? If they hid this liberty from us all these years, why are they hiding this, and what else are they hiding?
I dig the irony of the USS Liberty survivors blowing the government out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That would be good.
Phil, I'd like to ask you a question. After you die, what's the one thing you would actually like for something to happen, somebody to say, somebody to do at your funeral that would make your life worth it?
That's a very interesting question. Never even thought about it. I think what, of course, I'm not going to have a funeral. I'm going to be cremated. But I would like to be remembered as a person that has a deep love for his family, his country, his fellow Americans, and people of the world. The truth is all I ever wanted, is the truth. And that would be plenty good enough for me. And to have this film made and for everybody to read the book, that's my sincere desire, as much time as I got left on this earth. And my other desire is to get, if it's possible, a archive of this great radio show from Danny and or yourself will be much appreciated. And, that's kind of a hard question to answer, but I just want to be remembered as a person that loved his country and honest. And I don't want any other Americans to be slaughtered by the Zionist state of Israel and get by with it.
Well, the reason we do this show is not for the big audience. It's for the one. There's a story, a common thread with almost everybody who does something important with their life. And if they all tell their own individual stories about what happened to them and why they do what they do, there is one, or at least I hope there is, always one, that's listening to each individual show at some point in their life when they catch the archive or whatever. And that story is so strikingly similar to their own story up to this point that they stop doing nothing of importance with their life, that they actually start living. You know, at the moment, I don't want to be alive. I want to live. It's two very, very different things. Because there are a lot of people who are alive today, technically, you know, that don't feel alive. And it's getting worse and worse as time goes on for many. But however, I did see an interesting TED Talk the other day, and it showed the amount of people that died from X diseases, you know, whatever the disease is. Everything's going down over a long period of time. Poverty. Everything's going down everywhere in the world over time. All of these things are signs of progress. The USS Liberty movie getting made, that's progress. That's the thing that's going on here, ladies and gentlemen, is we forget where we've come from. That's why they try to erase history, because a person who does not know who he is or where he comes from doesn't have power. All right? Once you know what you're willing to sacrifice, once you know what you're willing to fight for, that's when you've got power, not before. A lot of people live their entire life without deciding that there is actually something worth fighting for. That today and what we do today is only ever training for what we might do tomorrow. So you've got to make today count and learn as much as you can. Because if you don't, you're screwed, mate. It's a waste of your life. I don't like sitting around. The concept of How can I spend a couple of hours wasting my life today? I feel like there's a good reason for it, though. I've just changed the world a little bit in this last couple of hours. Just a little bit. Maybe changed it for one person. Even if a couple of people were uplifted, it's worth it. And now, I deserve a break. I'm going to relax. I'm going to smoke some weed. You know, like, these are the kind of, like, little rewards that we give ourselves, ladies and gentlemen, for doing what it is that we do. And it's completely different depending on who you talk to. And I think that a lot of the time we don't reward ourselves enough, and particularly activists don't reward themselves enough, gentlemen. You know, sit down, think about it for a second. Have you been doing something good today for the world? Of noble mind and heart? Yeah, you have. Then you're doing enough. And a lot of times people get all pressured in this business. And make no bones about it, ladies and gentlemen. The truth movement, activism itself, is a business. It ain't a business about making money. It's a business of saving mankind. My motivation is not hope. My motivation is not aspirations. My motivation is not money. My motivation is fear. Because I found out that there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery that controls society and are eventually going to enslave me and everybody else, and we're going to be subsequently exterminated. My fear of that happening is the reason I got up at 2 o'clock this morning. Okay? To start editing stuff to expose the kind of scumbaggery I don't like. Fear gets me out of bed in the morning, ladies and gentlemen. It isn't happiness and isn't my next fix. I don't want to die. And I don't want to get subjugated. I want my freedom. I want my fucking life. And unfortunately, this is the only thing I can do. The employers! God damn! I hate employers so much! Because when you get treated so terribly by all of them, and you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? Considering your previous employment and what they've done to you, you know, it's just, they don't care, all right? They're not there to pay you to have a life and a career and something to actually have meaning to grasp onto. No, you're there to perform one particular task because they can't be bothered doing it themselves. And that's all you are to them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to me. I just took up the last couple of minutes of the thing with a rant. I'm sorry, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. We have Dave Gary and Phil Turney joining us, ladies and gentlemen. LibertyErased.com. And what was the other one?
It's ErasingTheLiberty.com and USSLibertyMovie.com. And you don't have to apologize for that. It was a great rant, Vinny. And I had a great time here, and I'm sure Phil did as well. Phil, you out there, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it very, very much.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. For your listening pleasure. We'll see you again sometime, folks.